Hi, I am not Katie Anthony.
And I am not Ronit Fineglass playing.
Nope, but do not hit stop. Keep listening because Katie and Ronit will be right with you in like just a few seconds. I promise. I'm Tina Knoll, founder of Large Media, and I was a co-creator of Mouthy Messy Mandatory along with Katie and Ronit.
And I'm Sarah Leibovitz. I'm a producer and editor of Mouthy Messy Mandatory.
We're just popping in to let you know that Katie and Ronit are on vacation and they will be back with fresh episodes of the show next week. But we know how much you love them and you want to hear their voices right now. So we're here to bring you some of our favorite clips.
That's right. We've pulled some of our favorite moments from past episodes and brought them all together here for you as something to hold you over until they're back and fresh and ready to go next week.
So enjoy.
Can we talk about the most fucked up Christmas song?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know which one I'm going to say?
No, I really don't. I could spend time trying to figure it out, but it'll take a lot of time.
Let's not do it.
You tell me.
Well, a lot of people think it's Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Oh, I know that one. Oh, of course. That is so obviously bad that I didn't even think of it.
Okay, but you guys, it's actually not.
Wow.
It's actually not because it was written at a time when women were not empowered to say, yes, I want to fuck. And so if you look at this song through the lens of the context in which it was written, the social context in which it was written, she is actually saying yes. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
She is adding excuses into
this
song. This
is interesting. Is this your own analysis?
Fuck no. I'm not that smart. I'm like Captain Obvious. I'm like, she says, what's in this drink? It's a rape anthem.
Yeah.
I obviously think that's exactly what it was. But no, a lot of people who are smarter than I was were like, guys, slow your roll. Let's actually look at this. Baby, It's Cold Outside is not a rape anthem. That being said, if it were written today, it would be pretty fucked up. But it was written in like the 40s or the 30s. I don't know. It was written a long time ago.
So it was a way of kind of getting it on Christmas.
Correct.
In the best possible way a woman could express it.
Exactly. You know, and over and over again in the song, she's like, but people, what are people going to say?
There's bound to be talk tomorrow.
Think of my lifelong
sorrow. At least there will be plenty implied.
If you got pneumonia and die.
I really can't.
My parents are going to be worried. My sister's going to, you know, talk and whatever.
It's your
my
hurry.
Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace
so
roar.
Really, I'd better skirt.
So she's really concerned about her reputation, but then at the same time, she's not actually fucking going.
Maybe just a cigarette more.
Never such a blazer before.
I've got to get
but
home.
But maybe you'd freeze out there.
Okay,
she's not like, hand me my coat, get the fuck out of my way. She's like, well, maybe I will hang out a little bit longer.
Interesting. I think that's really an interesting way to think about that song. I appreciate that because I was just like, we hate that song. We can't listen to that song anymore. It's bad. And
now
I feel like
it's
maybe
totally
it's okay.
You know what song you can't listen to? The most fucked up Christmas
song. I saw Mommy kissing Santa Claus, which is totally weird.
No, we're not slut shaming Mommy. She can kiss whoever the fuck she wants to.
I don't, but people in disguises
okay,
coming into
weird.
Your
yeah.
house.
Yeah, yeah. Plus beards.
Plus in front of the children.
Beards.
I just, it's
not
like
a
fake adultery.
No, the most fucked up Christmas song is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen.
Because
Rudolph is fucking bullied.
All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph.
Yes, and of course, but
yes,
he's redemption at the end.
No, they're not like, I'm really sorry, Rudolph.
Right, they're just like, you became a winner
hero. You're fucking useful.
Now you're buff.
Get on the sleigh.
Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
It's fucked up.
Then how the reindeer loved him as they shot it out with
glee.
It's fucked up.
He's harnessed up.
Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
It's like the ugly duckling story where everyone's like, oh, stupid ugly duckling. And they're like, oh, you're gorgeous now.
Now you're
I
gorgeous
like you.
Now. Or,
well, fuck you.
Okay.
Maybe I don't want to hang out with you. I wish Rudolph would be like, fuck all y'all.
I'm not pulling the sled.
No.
Okay.
You can get your own fucking lantern and hang it around your neck or whatever.
Users.
Yeah, exactly. Users
all
and
right.
haters. Dasher, Dancer, the whole fucking lot of them.
Let's not even get to Santa.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he sets the example for the reindeer.
Totally. I know. He is a role
Why
model.
Why didn't he protect Rudolph?
I don't know. He was like, well, I guess that's good for young reindeer. They got to be tough. Reindeer don't cry.
You got to tough up those hooves.
Yeah, it's like Friday Night Lights at the North. It's like North Pole Lights. He's like the coach.
Today's episode of Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory is brought to you by the Sinclair Broadcast Group. Sinclair, you can definitely trust us. Hi, I'm Katie.
I'm Ronit.
We are concerned about the disturbing trend of one-sided, opinionated, hyperbolic, ridiculous, and completely biased podcasts taking over our country.
More alarming, some people subscribe to these podcasts. They rate them and share them. They tag people. And worse, they engage with podcasters via social media and in some cases get their families to listen. When will it end?
Even more damaging, these podcasters have become emboldened, releasing a veritable avalanche of podcasts now readily available to the unsuspecting public with scores of new episodes highlighting gender inequality, cultural appropriation, rape culture, Me Too, and anything and everything under a frankly feminist umbrella. They must be stopped. This is very dangerous to our democracy.
I'm trying to help you with your face, with my face. Isn't my face helping you?
Yeah, it's so helping. Okay. We are not brought to you by the Sinclair Broadcast Group.
No, that's true. But we are going to talk about the Sinclair Broadcast Group today. And it's wackadoodle mandatory script that it handed out to many, many, many of its TV stations. Well, all of them.
Yeah. Did you see the viral video?
I did see the viral
video.
What did you think? It's so eerie. Gosh, it's so eerie. What I thought was, so maybe we should back up. So Deadline was the one who kind of put this all together. They aggregated it. So basically Sinclair is this broadcast network that reaches about 40% of U.S. homes, and it's about to make a deal to reach more. And it forced its anchors to read a statement that is basically propaganda.
Exactly. So every day, Sinclair Broadcast Group sends its subsidiary stations clips or topics or stories they have to cover. They're called must runs. Mm. And this in and of itself isn't necessarily an original concept. You know, there are things that must run. The top stories of the day, you've got to cover them. But what's interesting about SBG is that their must runs are not necessarily the top stories of the day. They're not necessarily
unbiased,
journalistically sound, yeah. I would say. So, for example, there's like a terrorism watch desk segment, the theme music to which is basically like, like, if you see a Muslim run is basically the thesis of the terrorism watch desk. And there's also these commentary segments by a Republican pundit named David Epstein, who worked on the Trump campaign, also worked on the McCain campaign. And
isn't it Epstein?
I've heard. So
Epstein?
It's spelled Epstein.
Epstein.
But yeah.
I don't know. I just it's
Bill
fun
Maher
to say
it Epstein.
OK, well, you're usually right about those things.
Well, if
even
I'm
though
wrong,
I want to say Epstein, I think it's Epstein.
I wouldn't necessarily say Bill Maher said it. So it's true. That's not my personal philosophy.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with Epstein just because I trust his, you know.
So a question
checkers.
For you.
Yes.
I'm not going to interrupt your entire train of thought. Just the beginning of it or the middle of it. So did you know about Sinclair before this debacle? Because I did not.
I watched the John Oliver segment about it that was, I don't know, maybe in July, like June or July. Mm-hmm. And it was alarming. It was alarming at the time because he did kind of the same thing where he scrapped together a bunch of local anchors reading the same script. And this was about an FBI, like, plot, a personal vendetta against Flynn at the time.
Wow.
That had been handed down.
Just this Tuesday night, anchors at Sinclair stations all over the country introduce a story about Michael Flynn like this.
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the Russia investigation of President Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the Russia investigation of President Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta
in pursuing the Russia investigation of
President Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the investigation?
It could very well be true.
Yeah, But you could say it could very well be true about anything.
This is okay. So this is what's really distressing about SBG. It's not that they own a lot of stations. It's that they own a lot of stations, but they treat these stations like their hobby or like a club that they make the rules for, and not like a like a journalistic enterprise.
Sure.
So,
well, there's no independence then in those statements, and there's no overarching, you know, kind of screener for
totally.
The news to see whether or not it's unbiased or even factual.
Totally. So I actually brought a clip. So David Epstein did a commentary piece about turnover in the Trump White House, which if, you know, as he said publicly on several occasions, SBG produces content, but it's straight down the middle. Hashtag fair and balanced. Sure, David. See you there.
see you at Fair and Balanced Avenue.
Yeah. Like I'll be joke. On the right side of the street on Fair and Balanced Avenue. So he wrote, he delivered this commentary. He does these like 1 minute bits, and his whole philosophy, well, I'll just let him say it.
Yeah.
President Trump continues to reshape his administration. In the past few weeks, the president has announced a new Secretary of State, CIA Director, top economic advisor, national security advisor, and Secretary of Veterans Affairs. More changes are always possible.
And he basically says that the turnover is a result of, you know, people defecting from Trump's agenda. And it's not that there's chaos or that it's a poorly managed enterprise or that this guy's a fucking nutcase and is totally impossible to work for. It's that, well, he just needs to be surrounded with the right people. And I would rather have a new Secretary of State every week
than have anything like the Iran deal happen ever again.
He talks about how a soldier died on Hillary Clinton's watch as Secretary of State. Like, you are fucking
high,
man.
It's like a bait and switch.
It's a total bait and switch.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, like, yes, everyone knows I'm a Republican. Yes, this is branded as commentary. But then he also says, but I am delivering facts and information to you. Facts and information.
Well, the problem, I feel very scared about this news story, partially because I wonder how many outlets have reported this sort of canned news that I've missed, and how many Americans who are not going to believe this aggregated anchor thing that, you know, it was commanded by Sinclair and that it isn't true, that it's true. How many people believe it and don't second guess? Because I have my strong opinions, but I'm also very impressionable. And I can imagine that a lot of people in this country are very impressionable. And if you don't believe in John Oliver, what he's doing, if you don't want to read Deadspin, if you don't want to watch these videos, you could just completely blow it off and decide that it's all propaganda of its own. And I think media is frightening to me. I feel very grateful right now for the internet, even though the internet has sort of hatched a whole bunch of fake news stories. It's also could potentially be, when I hear a story like this, one of the only sources for truth or for something that isn't this kind of canned voice for Trump.
Oh my God, I just called Kanye crazy like 15 times in a row. What is wrong with me? That is so hard. That is so hard. Like, but that's the word that keeps popping into my head. Like, how can I get it out? Like, what am I trying to say?
Exactly. And it's hard. It takes a lot of practice. And you've been socialized to reach for that word. It's used in colloquial English. We use it all the time. People say things like, that drives me crazy, that drives me nuts, that drives me bonkers, it's bananas, yada, yada, yada. The weather is schizo. And
yeah.
All those kinds of things. And so I, 2 years ago, decided to give up using the word crazy as a New Year's resolution because I became aware of just how ableist it is and how harmful it is. And so I had to start putting together a lexicon for myself of things to say instead. And a lot of it was just slowing down and thinking about, what do I really mean?
Mm.
Am I trying to say this person's ridiculous? Am I trying to say this person is frustrating? Am I trying to say this person's just ignorant or wrong or really, really, really irritating me? Is there another way that I can say it that doesn't hurt anybody? And I think it's similar to the exercise a lot of people had to go through when they stopped using the R word to talk about disability,
yeah.
Right? We hate that word. That's mm-hmm. a terrible, terrible word. It's a slur. We don't use. A long time ago, that was a diagnostic term, right? That was a word that it was okay to use. And it's become weaponized. It's a slur. It's every bit as bad as the N word. We don't use it anymore. And so you have to stop and think about, what am I trying to say, really? What am I trying to convey? And is there a better word that I can reach for that's not going to hurt anybody along the way?
Yeah. It takes a little work. It takes work to reform yourself, but you can do it.
So what are we going to say about Kanye? Like, what's the word for Kanye?
What he said was unexpected. I mean, as you were talking about that, I thought, you know, I remember in preschool they would say about the kids, that was an unexpected choice. Yes. And I feel that that is more about me. I did not expect that. That puts it squarely on me right now until I can find a better word.
Right.
I love that.
And Jeff Sessions' statement about this new policy was, we don't want to separate families, but we don't want families to come to the border illegally. He said, this is just the way the world works. But
it is if you make the world that way. Right. Like, whoa, my hands are tied. I just initiated this brand new policy that's going to fuck up people's lives profoundly. Like, I cannot even handle the, like, whoa, what happened? Right. You know what happened. Also, Trump tried to blame Democrats for this.
Yeah, recently.
No, dude, this was all you.
Yeah, well, previously, if people had been detained, they were allowed to stay with their children. And this is, I guess, part of Jeff Sessions' way of deterring more immigration. And a lot of people interviewed, a lot of the immigrants who are being held separate from their children have said that they would not have come had they known that they would be separated from their children, because it's a very new policy. Yeah. And some didn't find out until they got there, and some have been separated. There was a story of a woman who has a 6-year-old blind daughter and a son who's about 8 or 9 who's been kept about an hour away from them. So she thinks about her children all the time and she has no idea how they are.
You know, I would think twice about ringing your doorbell to sell you Girl Scout cookies if I knew that you were going to punch me in the face when you opened the door. But that doesn't mean that's like a logical thing to do when the Girl Scouts ring your doorbell.
And like, it's very alarming. One man who had a 13-year-old son, the son was shipped over to Chicago for holding, and he's in the Southwest. And he says they cried so much when they separated them.
Of course. This is like such an unconscionable violation of human rights that is happening right now in our borders. You know, just a month ago, after the whole Kanye West slavery was a choice thing, I actually watched 12 Years a Slave because it made me think about, like, when was the last time I really engaged in the idea of slavery and the historical facts of slavery? I was in school. You know, it's not something that I have chosen to put into my life. And I thought, you know what, I need to really revisit this. I need to check it out. And the scenes in which the children were taken from their parents at the slave auctions were absolutely harrowing and devastating. And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, and the ACLU
on our borders.
Yeah, the ACLU has mentioned, so there's a lawyer fighting this case, and his name is Lee Gallant, and he's suing the administration on behalf of all these separated families. And he says the law does not remotely require the administration's family separation practice. Not at all. And the administration is trying to shift the blame to Congress. And it's the choice of the administration to do this. And the law, though it's been in effect for years, it's only the administration now believing that it should be required to separate the families. That was like ridiculous. Yeah. But what you're basically saying is that, okay, so if you have a country where people are in danger because they're being stalked by a gang, you know, they're coming to our country because their businesses and their lives are in danger. One woman told a story about someone who worked for her business. The employee was killed as a threat to her own family. So she and her husband and their children decided to come to our border. And the idea of coming to the border for safety and then knowing that they're going to take your kid away defeats the whole purpose of having come to a country for safety and asylum. It's everyone's right to ask for asylum. It's not our domain to separate children from their families.
Absolutely. And this just goes right back to what we were talking about earlier about this like bootstrap mythology. We're like, well, if these immigrants were well educated and worthy of us, America, the great nation of America, then they wouldn't be arriving on our door trying to sneak into the country for safety. They must have done something wrong. They must be stupid. They must be lazy. They must be criminals. And this entire idea that, like, if they were worthwhile, they would appear worthwhile to our, like, racist society, it's at the heart of why we're not in the streets right now protesting this incredibly unconscionable, inhumane treatment of human beings at our government's hands.
Right. And
like, do we all know people who are smart and hardworking and have been successful? Yes. Do we all know people who are smart and hardworking and have not been successful and are struggling in poverty, whether that's because of a disability or an illness or a family tragedy or an addiction?
Extenuating circumstance.
Who knows what can happen? Natural disasters. I mean, in Puerto Rico, we're going to be seeing a lot of smart, hardworking, worthwhile human beings who should not have to do anything to convince us of the fact that they are all of those things.
And human.
And human beings deserving of clean water, right? I mean, we're seeing all of those people just completely ignored. I mean, FEMA's gone. The president's not talking about it. Nothing's coming for them. I mean, good thing Lin-Manuel Miranda's still at the helm, because seriously, that guy's driving change in Puerto Rico, and he's an amazing hero.
Thanks for sticking with us through this week of clips and bits. We'll be back with the normally scheduled programming next week, we promise.
Meanwhile, head over to the Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory Facebook page and join in more of the conversation.
Yeah, we'll be there, ready to chat, ready to discuss with you. Bye.